Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Now, from the Star Reynolds Sports Desk, your 950 KJR Sports Headlines.
Sports Headlines at 3 o'clock, brought to you by VenueKings.com. Washington quarterback Dwayne Haskins fined and may be suspended for a high-risk COVID violation of partying maskless at a strip club just hours after losing to the Seahawks. Steelers lost by double digits to the 2-win Bengals last night. They are in jeopardy of not winning their division now. It's still very much up in the air, and they do take on the Browns in the last week of the regular season. Rams running back Cam Akers going to miss at least the Hawks game, if not longer, with a high ankle sprain. Saints have placed Jameis Winston on the COVID list, and the 49ers making the quarterback shuffle. Nick Mullins and running back Raheem Mostert out for the season. C.J. Beathard likely will start, and the team has signed former first-round quarterback Josh Rosen off the Bucs practice squad. Florida star tight end Kyle Pitts has declared for the NFL draft. We're talking plenty of football with our friend Hugh Millen right now on 950 KJR.
And now, two goofy, wacko, out-of-touch homers.
Just brutal radio. Just horrible.
Live.
41 yards.
From Elliott Bay.
Can you feel it now?
ACM. This is Softy and Dick.
Softy and Dick without the soft one this week. He'll be back for you next week as we round the corner into 2021. But Hugh Breedlove Millen is with us. Jackson Feltz is with us as always. And before, Hugh, we start with you, I've got to bring Jackson's feet to the fire for a second.
Oh, boy.
I was thinking about something last night as I was reading this list of Seattle Seahawks Pro Bowlers, which has gone now to 7, 5 regulars, 2 special teamers, the most Pro Bowl picks they have ever had, tied with 84, 2005, 2016, 2017. There is no Jason Myers on this list, who many would argue, as have argued on Twitter, including Greg Bell, that should be a Pro Bowler. No Michael Dixon on this list, which Greg Bell also argued should be a Pro Bowler. There's no Dwayne Brown on this list that I know Hugh Millen thinks has had a hell of a season. There is no Tyler Lockett on this list. There is no Chris Carson on this list. There is no K.J. Wright on this list. There is no Shaq Griffin on this list that all would consider have at least played upwards towards Pro Bowl level. I will ask Jackson Feltz once again, with all of those players I mentioned at Pro Bowl or near Pro Bowl caliber level, and Russell Wilson playing very mediocre football over the last month, do you still think that if you took out Russell Wilson and inserted, you know, replacement quarterbacks X, that all these quarterbacks that are playing, the Andy Daltons out there, and even a little bit worse than Andy Dalton, are the Seahawks still a disaster of a 2 or 3 win football
team?
Okay,
first off, it isn't Andy Dalton. We decided it was Geno Smith based on just the backup that was there, right? Okay. So are we talking Dalton, or are we talking Geno Smith?
We're talking a reasonable replacement level quarterback. All right, Dalton's at the high end of that, and you know, whomever's at the low end, the C.J. Beathard, Ryan Finley at the low end.
Okay, if Dalton is the quarterback right there, then I think the Seahawks are probably right around 7-9.
Okay.
If Geno Smith's the quarterback, it's a 4-win team.
All right, Hugh, I'm going to bring you into the conversation. Russell has not carried this team at all over the last few weeks. They have still continued to win. The defense has gotten better. Does Russell Wilson really make up 7-8 wins over the course of a season?
This reminds me, I went to Utah with some college buddies, about 15 of us, and the very first run of the afternoon was a double black diamond from the top, you know, a little shoot that was like 8 feet wide. It was like, really? No warm-up run?
We're going hard right off the bat.
You're just going right at that one. Well, I should be in a position to at least give an opinion about that. My inclination is that that Seattle would be. I think Jackson's about right. I think they might be around a 7-9 team. I wouldn't dispute that. I mean, it's pure conjecture, but I will say that I found myself on many occasions feeling that of the practices that I have seen Geno Smith, I've thought that in practice that he has appeared many times to be the most capable backup in the Russell Wilson era. And I'm not saying that were he pressed to play, would he perform at that level? Or you know, obviously you're not going to perform at Russell Wilson's level, or you shouldn't have paid Russell Wilson all that money. But would the drop-off be manageable? Possibly. Every time I've seen Geno Smith, I say, this guy looks pretty good. But he hasn't done it at the professional level in the games when it counts. So I'm not prepared to say that he's a quality starting quarterback. But it is interesting. I having been in these Pro Bowl votings as a player all through my years in the career, it can be really political. It can be nebulous and abstract, and a lot of times guys just with names will get it. I mean, I can recall sometimes teams will not vote a worthy guy because they want their guy. An example of that, and I could cite more than one, but Mike Lansford was a really good kicker for the Rams, former Husky, coincidentally, in that, but he was a good clutch kicker. But that was in the era of who's the Saints, the Saints kicker, the left footer that went to the Hall of Fame.
Dempsey.
Stenerud? No, he's the sweet, somebody help me. There's people out there.
Era are we talking about?
This is like the 80s and 90s. He's a Hall of Fame kicker. Oh boy, the Saints, doggone it. This is CTA.
Right. Morton Anderson.
Thank
you. There you go. Good job.
Morton Anderson. So what Lansford would say is we vote for anybody but Morton Anderson because he wanted to make the Pro Bowl. And so here we were as the Rams submitting our team vote, and it wasn't Morton Anderson.
I gotcha.
We wanted to get Lansford in there. So that kind of stuff happens. Sometimes somebody will throw out a name, and some people in their mind, I know that they're just going, that's a BS suggestion, but they don't want to, they don't want to upset the apple cart. So somebody who might have called out, a former teammate of theirs is a buddy, and they'll say, I want some jack wagon to be in the Pro Bowl, and guys don't want to dispute it because maybe it's a captain on your team. So there's some politics. Now, in the end, it's probably mostly deserving. It's like who's the best hitters in baseball? Well, usually the guys with the best averages, but sometimes guys get robbed.
Right.
It's not 162 games, it's 16, and there's times where guys just kind of ride the coattails.
The reason I bring it up is we had a discussion, Softy and Jackson and I, a number of times towards the beginning of the season when there was a narrative both locally and nationally that Russell Wilson was amazing, the rest of the team was terrible, and he's just carrying the rest of the team. And I bristled at that then, and I think we've seen over the last 5 or 6 weeks that narrative was entirely false because the rest of the team has stepped up, and Russell Wilson has, through his own play and also through the play calling over the last 5 or 6 weeks, which has been more conservative, I just don't feel it's the case that Russell Wilson is a one-man show and just carrying the football team. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think the Seahawks are in contention to win this division, and they've got a pretty good team. Their line is playing better. I thought now you might be ascribing to me a sense of Dwayne Brown that I'm not sure I've expressed. I think he's really good, but there's a lot of times where he gets, he makes his blocks, but he makes them way too deep in the backfield in pass blocking.
So he gives ground.
And I've like, well, okay. There wasn't a stat that was produced there. And by the way, I'm going to just have a little diversion here. Mm-hmm. if you think of all the things that influence whether you win or lose, anything you can think of probably has a stat. Net yards per pass attempt with the quarterback, it has a stat. Net explosive plays, it has a stat. Turnovers, it has a stat. Sacks, quarterback hits. There's one aspect of football that I think is immensely important to the game, and there is no stat for it. And that is the concept of the offensive line getting pushed back into the quarterback's face. So you'll look around, you could scour the internet, and you're going to find sacks, you're going to find quarterback hits and quarterback pressures. Quarterback hits usually means quarterback knockdowns, okay? So you can get a sack and not get a knockdown. Jamal Adams has had two of them in the last 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. If you're the closest guy, when a quarterback runs out of bounds behind the line of scrimmage, then you get a sack. A quarterback pressure is one where your pressure forces the quarterback to slide in his feet. But you know what? There's a hell of a lot of touchdown passes thrown on quarterback pressures. You sit there, you think, okay, I'm going to look at, you know, just pick Carlos Dunlap. Let's say he had 10 pressures. You don't know that the quarterbacks weren't 10 for 10 in that situation.
Right.
Okay, so quarterback pressures don't always mean defensive success on that particular play. But again, getting back to my statement, there is no stat for the act of if I'm a guard and you're a defensive tackle and I'm charged with pass protecting my quarterback, and at the snap of the ball I try and pass block you and you just freaking bench press me right back into the lap of the quarterback. You just walk me literally back to the front door of the quarterback. You've dominated the hell out of me. You have impacted that play immensely. You might have caused an interception, you might have caused an incompletion, what have you, but there's no stat that reflects what you just did to me.
Interesting.
And so, so all of these things are tied in, and so stats too much doesn't always reflect who's playing the best.
Well, we'll get to your take a little bit later on some of these Pro Bowlers like Jamal Adams that were voted in, and we'll find out if you think they were deserving, and maybe a snub or two that you feel that didn't get voted on that you really liked from the Seahawks thus far this year. We're going to switch our focus to college football, the world of the Pac-12, with our good friend John Wilner, brought to you by Simply Seattle, coming up next on 950 KJ.
It's time for our weekly Pac-12 conversation with San Jose Mercury News reporter John Wilner. Brought to you by Simply Seattle. Our friends at SimplySeattle.com have the most amazing collection of all things Seattle. Seahawks gear, UW hats, and the largest selection of Sonics gear anywhere in the world. Learn more at SimplySeattle.com.
Ah, it's that time again on a Tuesday. Our friend from the San Jose Mercury News, the Wilner Hotline, brought to you by our friends at SimplySeattle.com, your one-stop shop for the holidays. Order now and choose in-store pickup for free, plus use the code SOFTY10, SOFTY10, and save 10% off your whole order. John Wilner joins us. Hi, John, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. Hey, guys.
We're doing well. We're doing well, and we've wrapped up the Pac-12 season, whatever type of season you want to call it. I thought Stuart Mandel's tweet in The Athletic on how he defined the season was pretty apropos. He said the only proper way this Pac-12 glorified exhibition could end was with a 4-win team that finished second in his division winning the championship. That puts it pretty right to the point, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. The Pac-12 played football season in 2020, and that is, you know, that was important, but there's not a whole lot more that you could say about it. Never sniffed the playoff, only two bowl teams. I'm not sure the championship game situation was handled properly, in my opinion. A lot of cancellations. The players deserve a lot of credit because they're the ones who dealt with all of it and went through all that testing every day. But the Pac-12 played, and that was the most important thing.
Now that we have the benefit of hindsight, I was always a fan of playing in the spring. I understand once the Big Ten pulled out that I was like, okay, well, can you really play just with your own conference in the spring? But in hindsight now, should we have just waited and played in the spring?
I don't think so. I think that I just don't think it was doable if you're the only conference doing it.
Okay.
And it would have just been a reminder that the Pac-12 was different, right? You're kind of out there on an island and everybody can see you. Plus, there certainly was the issue about, you know, how many games could you realistically play in the winter, spring, and still be fair to the players from a health standpoint and having them be ready to go for a full season starting with training camp in August, right? You kind of had to, if you were going to play, you probably had to get it wrapped up by February, which means really playing in January, February, and I just don't think that was going to be doable. It would have been a bad idea.
Well, you talked about the Pac-12 championship game and seemed to have some thoughts about that. Now, as Dick said, that we have the benefit of hindsight. You know, I know going into last week, the SEC had played 70 of 71 scheduled games, and it's just another example where we just look like Tweedledee and Tweedledum out here on the West Coast. Just the way I just look at the standings, for example, a third of the conference in the Pac-12 has four games or played, and yet there's teams that have seven games played. I mean, it just seems like another mess. But your thoughts on that, and specifically about the conference championship game?
Well, I just thought that they should not have played the championship game once a division winner was not available, right? I mean, it's not an AAU tournament. They set it up. You win your division, you go play for the championship. And if you don't have a division winner, then you just call it off, right? I mean, that's what the SEC and Big Ten were going to do. If they had been in the same position, they were not going to play. They were going to declare their division champs the co-conference champions and just have no game. Pac-12 was dead set on playing, so it put a second-place team in there. And to me, that devalues the integrity of the structure of your championship. It devalues the regular season, and it put the conference in a bad spot on bowl day. Instead of USC being undefeated and probably ranked about 10th, you've got a two-loss second place team that is going to go into the Fiesta Bowl. And I don't know who of your listeners, if anybody watched, but you know, the Pac-12 didn't get mentioned for 2.5 hours on ESPN's show. And then when it finally did, it got mentioned and the analysts laughed about it because they said there's a lot of champions in the Pac-12. And that kind of thing hurts the conference's brand nationally with all those eyeballs coast to coast on ESPN. So I just thought they shouldn't have played.
Well, I think you make all good points. I agree with those. And yet up here, there's a particular brand of disappointment or bitterness about it all. But I think there are some that will say, hang on a sec, for the Huskies that felt jobbed about it. Washington had one victory against Pac-12 North opponents, and that was Oregon State, which lost five games. They had one victory against a team with a winning record. That was Utah, who was 3-2, and but for a comeback down 28-0 at halftime against the Cougars, wouldn't have even had that. Their two best opponents going into the season, you would have thought, would have been Oregon and Cal. Didn't have to play them. Didn't have to play any road games the entire season. So while
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. I think it's all a junk show. You look and say the Huskies really don't have a real solid footing to complain too much when you consider those facts.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, to me, it's just you win the games. It was not going to be perfect in terms of who was playing who, home, road, all that, number of games. You win the games. And Washington one had the best winning percentage in the division, and they were the division champions. The Pac-12 proclaimed them the division champions. The commissioner said that one reason they wanted Oregon to be elevated into the title game is because they didn't get a chance to play for the championship of the North because the Washington game got canceled. And my thinking is, well, sure they did. If they had beaten either Oregon State or Cal, they would have won the North. You know, the competition is the competition. You win the games, and everything takes care of itself. And that's, I had a little bit of a hard time processing why the Pac-12 felt like, you know, the Oregon didn't have a chance to win the division when all they had to do was win the games they played. You know, that's what you do. You win the games you play.
John, you had Washington end up number three in your Pac-12 end of season rankings. That was higher than where you had them at the beginning of the season. So what did you learn from Washington and Jimmy Lake's first year?
You know, it's hard to say because they haven't played in so long.
Right.
I had to actually look. Wait, when was the last time they played? When was the last game they won? I mean, I think they haven't won a game. Was it Thanksgiving weekend?
Yeah, it was Utah Thanksgiving weekend, yeah. Then they lost to Stanford, God, that and that's like the end of the season.
4 months ago. I mean, it's just the whole thing is kind of chaotic. But certainly, their commitment to running the ball, I thought was and using the tight end, you know, that's kind of the football that I think is the best way to play if you're a school like Washington and you can recruit top level guys. You know, you don't need to use the gimmick offense. You know, you can run the ball and you can play with your tight end, and I was impressed with just kind of the general philosophy there. You know, the execution wasn't always great, and defensively they seem pretty good. You know, I do think that they, you know, they don't have the talent on defense, especially the front seven that maybe they did 3 or 4 years ago. But we'll see. Certainly, there was no. If you're a Washington fan and you watch those four games, I don't think you're coming away thinking, "Oh my gosh, we're doomed under Jimmy Lake."
You know, there's obviously so many differences between college football as an overall entity and the National Football League. But to, in my mind, to illustrate the absurdity of what we have in college football, compare college football to the NFL. So you got Roger Goodell, he's the commissioner. The closest thing I guess you could say would be Mark Emmert, because there's no football czar of the entire NCAA. But you have the different divisions and conferences in the NFL. You have the different conferences in football. And what the entity on the aggregate has in college football would be the equivalent of sitting there saying, well, we're going to have these divisions, but at the end we're going to have a bunch of guys sit in a hotel room and vote as to who are the champions of the divisions, and we're going to exclude, like, if you win the NFC West, you might be excluded from the playoffs if a panel of people vote they don't, with their eyeballs, think that you're worthy enough.
It just
100 years from now, I think they're going to look back at this era right now, the CFP, like this fledgling, you know, draft just wobbling around trying to, you know, break free from the BCS, but still far from a mature product. And we have an entity where you just geographically, take college football, we have an entity where the entire western portion of the country is almost every year excluded as an afterthought. And we can play all these games, but then a bunch of people are going to say, well, but your conference isn't worthy. It'd be like the NFC West champion getting shut out. I think it's absurd. And I wonder where we're going to have the leadership, where somebody's going to say, we have to have a system where all five of the conferences are champions, they are represented in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. At the very least, just from a regional perspective, just look at a map of the U.S. How do you exclude the western portion of the United States? I don't know your response to that, and are we going to see any changes in the next 5 or 10 years from all of this?
Well, I think a part of the issue is the Pac-12, you know, the playoff is all about having a dominant team. And the Pac-12 has not really produced a dominant team in the last, you know, 3, 4 years, 5 years. If they had the playoff, you know, back when USC was rolling or when Oregon was rolling under Chip Kelly, then all of a sudden you probably have got a pretty steady level of appearances in the playoff. It's just right now the conference is more about parity. And there's a lot of reasons for that. Certainly USC's situation is a big part of it, right? But I do think it's going to change. Now, the question is, the current contract runs out after the 2026 season. So I think for 2027, there's almost assuredly going to be an 18 playoff in which the Pac-12 champion would be part of it. The question is whether they will abort this current system prior to 2027. And I think that we took a step in that direction this year. The way Cincinnati was treated, I think, is going to get, you know, some momentum going. The, you know, I think it helps. The SEC is the key to the whole thing. The fact that A&M was fifth, I think, may help the SEC pivot a little bit towards wanting an 18 playoff sooner than later. We'll get it in 2027, but I don't know if it's going to come, you know, in 2 or 3 years. I'm not sure it will. A lot of it depends on the SEC's level of motivation.
So a couple things along those lines. First of all, you don't see the group of five just bowing out and saying to hell with it. We're going to make our own championship up and you guys can play in your college football. You don't see that happening. You think they'll hold out for an expansion, right?
Yeah, I don't know that they would do it in the next couple of years. I think that they're going to just assume that it's going to happen. And if it doesn't happen, then this will end up in court. That's the thing, is they can take the Power Five to court if they want to. It's hard for me to imagine that they would do that. That would have to happen very quickly, and there's a lot of pieces to it.
And the second thing is, where's the Pac-12 now? Now, if let's say we have a regular 2021 season, everybody plays the normal amount of games, and there's an undefeated Pac-12 team, are they automatically in like an undefeated team of the other four power conferences, or is the Pac-12 now closer to a group of five now?
I think if the Pac-12 has got an undefeated champion, that team is going to be in, especially if there's a decent non-conference win, right? I mean, you can't play, three FCS opponents, probably. But if you've got, three decent games, especially if there's one high-level game and you're undefeated, you're going to get in. That's been the case all along. The problem is it doesn't produce an undefeated team because nobody, there's the depth is good and there's nobody that's quite good enough to get there, right? I mean, the Pac-12 is a better conference, I think, it has been, than the ACC. The difference is Clemson. The Pac-12 doesn't have a Clemson. It's as good, if not better, than the Big 12, but there's been no Oklahoma.
Okay.
And so that's what we got to see out here in order for the Pac-12 to get back to be a regular participant.
I saw an interesting interview with Brian Kelly, and he seemed to be echoing or parroting Jimbo Fisher's basic claim, which is that and what Kelly said that caught my attention. He said, "Hey, if coaches were doing this Final Four, it would be different than the committee that they have." Now we understand that the committee has some former coaches and what have you, but he, upon elaboration, he was asserting that there's so many things that can go wrong when you play 10, 11 games. And he was saying, in essence, what he was saying without using the words Ohio State, he was saying that Ohio State doesn't deserve to be in there because they only played six games. Mm-hmm. And he was, in essence, as I said, aligned with Jimbo Fisher in that. What's your thought about just kind of the way people are perceiving the idea that your eyeballs tell you Ohio State is in the top four. I think most people would agree with that. They're probably, if there was some all-knowing entity that knew the four best, Ohio State's one of the four best. But the question of deserving and the idea that they only played six games, what about Kelly's thought that, hey, coaches would understand the real challenges of going 10, 11 games?
Yeah, I saw that. That was on Sunday during the selection show, and I thought he was very eloquent in the way he explained, the coach perspective of being in the grind every day and knowing all the things that could go wrong every hour and being able to get through that. And it was a very compelling argument for why Ohio State shouldn't be in it. I totally get it. But it gets back to, what is the committee's charge? And there has been, that's been a little bit of a moving target since they formed this thing back in 2014. Is it the four most deserving or is it the four best? And that has, it started off kind of being the most deserving. You win a conference championship, you're going to get in. But it's now veered toward, and it may have been when Alabama got in as the SEC runner-up, or as a non-SEC champion a couple of years ago, mm-hmm. it's kind of pivoted towards it's just the four best, and we're gonna decide the four best based on, you know, how we choose to. I think sometimes the makeup of the committee, right? Because there's members rolling on and rolling off, and a lot of times the coaches that are on the committee kind of end up moving the conversation, and so it depends on which coaches are on the committee. So it's a moving target, but I totally get what you're saying and what Brian Kelly said in terms of you know, some, you know, you got to get through it. You got to play 10 or 11, and there's no doubt about that. I think it's very, very compelling. That said, if you're asking the Vegas odds makers, who's your power ratings, Ohio State's clearly in the top four.
Yeah. John, always a pleasure. We thank you for joining us. You'll chat with Softy next week, but I'll chat with you when the calendar turns to 2021, and we'll have plenty of college basketball to talk about at that point, too. Thanks, man.
Sounds good. Happy holidays, guys.
You too. Okay. John Wilner, San Jose Mercury News, brought to you by our friends at SimplySeattle.com. We'll kind of carry that conversation with John over into the next segment with Hugh. I want to ask Hugh about this, the situation that we are in college football, where it literally is just the Clemson, Alabama, Ohio State Invitational, and then find your fourth team. Is that good for college football? And if not, how do we get it to change? We'll talk about that with you next on 950 KJR.
Vision Centers. Now back to Softy and Dick on your new home for the Huskies. Sports Radio 950 KJR.
Glad to have Hugh Millen with me. He'll be with me until later on today, most of the show today, as a matter of fact. And we've got a lot of college football to talk about. We also have some Seahawks questions to get mulled over with our friend Walter Jones. And, you know, Hugh, let's talk about the situation that John just mentioned with the elite nature of the top three. Really, it's the top three teams in college football.
Yeah.
And then everybody else. And I heard a stat today that only six teams have even ever won a college football playoff game. And this is going to be the seventh, I believe, college football playoff season. Only six teams have ever won a game. And those six teams are 1-6 currently in the recruiting ranking for 2021. So yeah, it's just going to continue. So, A, is that a good thing? And B, if it's not a good thing, then how do you break the cycle there?
Well, I think that there's been a trend over the last generation, call it loosely, might be more than a generation, where we see this idea that athletes want to go and congregate onto star teams. And I'll give you some examples. You know, Interlake High School used to be really dominant in football. They'd be, you know, Sammamish, Mercer Island, just, you know, me as a football coach in this area. There was more of a disbursement of the talent, and then you see more guys now moving into the Bellevue area to play for Bellevue or going to the Catholic schools, what have you, and you're creating these super teams. They are watching the LeBron Jameses of the world say, oh, I want to, you know, collect my group and get my superstar group and everybody, hey, let's just congregate here. I think it's influencing the entire sports landscape in ways that I don't think was present some years ago. And now what you're talking about, for example, look at the migration of talent off of the West Coast. The two best West Coast quarterbacks a year ago, you had Bryce Young go to Alabama from Mater Dei High School in Southern California. You had DJ Ugalele go to Clemson. From John Bosco, that's the Trinity League down in Southern California. Those guys would always be, at least one of them would go to SC, maybe Stanford, what have you. And now look at locally, you've got some of the two highest rated receivers. G. Scott went to Ohio State. Emeka Egbuka just announced a five-star guy. And I will tell you this about Egbuka. You know, I've seen both of those guys play many, many times. Emeka Egbuka is like a real bona fide OKG superstar level player. He's going to Ohio State. JT Tuimoloau, you know, I would be surprised if he doesn't go to Ohio State, given everything they've done with defensive ends and defensive linemen at Ohio State. So everybody's just saying, hey, let's go to the best teams. That wasn't what you had just a few short years ago. And so, yeah, it's a big concern. I think this, ask yourself, do you think Nick Saban wants to expand the playoffs from 4 teams to 8 teams or 16? Do you think that Dabo Swinney does? No.
Nope.
And that ought to tell you something. And so, yeah, the rich are getting richer. Everybody wants to congregate with them. But it reminds me of the NCAA tournament. Who's in the NCAA tournament, right? It was 64. What is it now? 67 or 68?
68, yeah.
68, right? So, and then nobody cares about the NIT. Well, who should care in theory if it's the 69th team and beyond? But that's what you have in college football, where the bowls have lost their luster. You know, you got players opting out of the Rose Bowls and Sugar Bowls. And so bowls have lost their luster. And now, to carry out the analogy, there's only 4 teams in the tournament, not 68, but mm-hmm. 4. And so I think it, you know, I've thought this for years and years. I'm not the first and only one to think of it, obviously, but I think that there should be 8. But I used to be resistant to 16. I thought that would dilute the gravity of the regular season. But I think based on the stats that you're citing and the how you do have this congregation, I'm of the mind now that I think 16 would be better than 4, and I never would have thought that. But I do think that it is a problem, and I don't see it getting any better based on the current system.
I'm wondering, and we're going to take a quick timeout when we come back. You can chew on this during the break. I'm wondering if one special player in 3 schools in the West Coast, because I only see you heard John Wilner say, hey, the depth of the Pac-12 is as good as the depth of the ACC, is as good as the depth of the Big 12, is as good as the depth of the Big 10. The problem is up top. Well, I only see 3 schools. Washington, Oregon, USC. That's it. That's all. Those are the only 3 schools that I see that could potentially take that mantle and get one of those teams to compete with the big boys of the other conferences. And I'm wondering if one superstar quarterback at one of those 3 schools could do that. We'll talk about that. And if Hugh thinks the final 4 teams are the correct final 4 teams, we'll come back after the top of the hour headlines on 950.
Okay, round 2. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.